I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's March 3rd, and we have a lot to talk about. I'm in Washington, D.C. this week, attending the National MS Society's Public Policy Conference. So I'm in the midst of about 300 MS activists from across the country, and tomorrow is our day on the Hill, when we'll be sitting down with our members of Congress to talk about the legislative issues that are most important to families affected by MS. This year, we're talking about putting an end to surprise hospital billing, increasing federal funding for MS research, providing greater access to MS medications, and improving natural disaster management and natural disaster relief for people living with MS. As is our custom on the first Real Talk MS episode of each month, I'd like to share where I'm going to be during the month. Whether it's a meeting or a conference or a speaking engagement, if I'm in your city or if we're attending the same meeting or conference, I hope you let me know and maybe we can find time to grab coffee or a cocktail together. This week, while I'm in Washington, D.C., I'm excited that I'll be connecting with a bunch of Real Talk MS listeners. And at the very end of the month, from March 29th through the 31st, I'll be in Sacramento, California, participating in the MS Society's State Action Day, which is really the same concept as the Public Policy Conference, but instead of focusing on federal legislation, we'll be focusing on pending legislation in the state of California. And considering the way that California has set an example among the states in creating new healthcare policy, these are always important conversations that we'll be having with our state legislators. So if you're going to be in Sacramento at the end of March, or in any of the places that I'm going to be, whether it's this month or any other month, I hope you'll let me know. You can shoot me an email at John, that's J-O-N, at realtalkms.com, or you can call the Real Talk MS listener hotline that I've set up to make it as easy as possible for us to connect. The number is area code 310-526-2283. That's area code 310-526-2283. And I hope I have an opportunity to meet you face-to-face either this month or in the not-too-distant future. Just about 3 months ago, when I attended the National MS Society's Leadership Conference, there was another MS Society conference taking place at the same time, at the same hotel. It was the Tykeson Fellows Conference, and this conference brought together about 100 young research and clinical trainees with senior scientists to learn about each other's latest research efforts and to build collaborations that tend to last for years after these fellowships have ended and these trainees become the senior scientists. These are the folks who are going to advance our future understanding of MS and create the future breakthroughs in MS rehabilitation strategies and treatments. I had an opportunity to meet several of the Tykeson Fellows and to learn about some of the amazing research that they're already doing. And that's when I met Dr. Jackie Batrai. After the conference, I found myself thinking a lot about Dr. Batrai's research, and I invited her to share her work. So Dr. Jackie Batrai is going to be joining me today, and we'll be talking about her work in exploring the disparities in MS-related depression and fatigue symptoms between African Americans who are living with MS and Caucasians who are living with MS. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Batrai, there are a few other things that you should know about. AB Science, a French pharmaceutical company, has announced the results of a clinical trial for the drug masitinib, and those results show that masitinib significantly slowed disability progression in people with primary progressive MS and with non-active secondary progressive MS. These initial results are encouraging because when you look at people living with primary progressive MS and non-active secondary progressive MS, you're looking at almost half of all the people living with MS. So if next steps in the clinical trial remain positive, Masitinib can potentially help a lot of people who don't have much, if anything at all, to choose from when it comes to disease-modifying therapy. Masitinib has actually been available in Europe since 2009, but not to humans. It's been marketed under the name Masivet, and it's been used as a treatment for mast cell tumors in dogs. Masitinib is an oral therapy, and it inhibits the activity of cells in the innate immune system. The theory is that by inhibiting this specific cell activity, the drug is limiting the inflammatory processes that destroy myelin. Masitinib is also being tested in clinical trials to treat ALS and Alzheimer's disease, along with a variety of cancers and asthma. Earlier clinical trials have shown masitinib to be safe and well-tolerated, with only minor side effects, if any at all. If you'd like to learn more about masitinib, I'll include a link to AB Science's announcement about their clinical trial results in today's show notes. And while we're on the subject of new and emerging treatments for MS, drug manufacturer Novartis has submitted applications to the Federal Drug Administration and the European Medicines Agency for approval of ofatumumab for relapsing forms of MS in adults. Ofatumumab targets B cells in a manner that's similar to Ocrevus, but the key difference here is that while administering Ocrevus requires receiving an infusion every 6 months, ofatumumab is administered by an auto-injector pen once a month. In clinical trials, ofatumumab demonstrated that it reduced the number of MS relapses, it reduced the number of active brain lesions, and it reduced MS disability progression. Ofatumumab is already approved in the United States for treating certain leukemias and is marketed under the brand name Arzerra. The FDA's approval of ofatumumab for treating relapsing forms of MS is expected by June of this year, and the EMA's approval is expected by 2021. Last week, I was in West Palm Beach, Florida, attending the ACTRIMS Forum. And by the way, if you haven't had a chance to listen to the bonus episode of Real Talk MS from the ACTRIMS Forum, you may want to make time to do that. I think it's loaded with good stuff. We're talking about breakthrough research, and we're talking with the people who are achieving that breakthrough research. So if you haven't yet, you might want to give it a listen. And you can find that episode by pointing your browser at realtalkms.com/ACTRIMS2020. That's realtalkms.com/ACTRIMS2020. Or if you have the Real Talk MS app installed on your phone, that episode is already downloaded and waiting for you. But I wanted to talk about one more study that was presented at ACTRIMS. Now, we already know that people living with MS often have low levels of vitamin D, and so oral vitamin D3 supplements are frequently recommended. But there hasn't been evidence that clearly supports vitamin D supplements as being beneficial to people living with MS. And a new study from Professor Sebastian Tork at the Institute of Neuropathology at the University Medical Center in Germany has perhaps made the issue of vitamin D supplements a bit more confusing. Professor Tork looked at the effects of vitamin D supplements on mice who were given the mouse version of MS and found that while providing a moderate dose of vitamin D supplements seemed to ease disease symptoms, giving a high dose of vitamin D supplements caused calcium levels to spike, which directly increased inflammation in the brain and spinal cord, worsening disability. Now, I'll add my usual reminder here, that there is a big difference between a mouse brain and a human brain. So clearly there's more work to be done, but Professor Tork concludes the summary of his research with a somewhat stark warning, and I'll quote that warning directly. Our data caution that in light of the currently limited information on a direct beneficial effect of vitamin D in MS, MS patients may be at danger of experiencing untoward immunological and/or clinical effects when vitamin D is supplemented excessively. So once again, this study serves as one more example of why you need to be a full partner in your MS treatment, why it's so important to review all of your medications, all of your supplements, and the information that you've discovered about these treatments with your neurologist. And if you'd like to review the details of this study, I'll include a link in today's show notes. Access to MS medications is an important conversation at this year's public policy conference. Specifically, the challenges that people living with MS face in gaining access to disease-modifying therapies. Very often, those challenges are financial challenges. And about a year and a half ago, I told you about what could only be described as a novel approach to lowering the cost of prescription drugs. PEHP Health and Benefits is an insurer that provides about 170,000 people in Utah with their health insurance. And this insurance company announced that they would fly people from Utah to San Diego, where they would be met by private transportation and driven to Tijuana to purchase one of 13 different prescription drugs, including the MS medications Ampira, Aubagio, Avonex, Copaxone, Gilenya, and Tecfidera. And PEHP Health and Benefits would even throw in $500 in cash to encourage people to make this trip. Now, the strategy, the reason behind the program is simple. A one-month supply of Avonex costs about $6,700 in the United States, and the same one-month supply of Avonex costs about $2,200 in Tijuana. And in 2018, the state of Utah passed a novel healthcare law that ordered insurance companies to offer state employees lower cost options and then share the savings in the form of cash payments. And the effect of that law was extended to everyone in the state, whether they were a state employee or not. So of the 170,000 people that PEHP Health and Benefits covers, turns out that about 400 of them were eligible to take advantage of this program. Now, of those 400, just 10 people have taken advantage of the offer. And with just 10 people participating over the last year, the state of Utah saved $225,000. Now, these people weren't necessarily living with MS, but they were taking one of the 13 prescription drugs that were eligible for this program. So by purchasing the drugs in Mexico for just 10 people, the state saved almost $250,000. And that was after paying for everyone's travel, paying for the medication, and paying out that $500 per trip cash incentive. And that really says a lot about how much these prescription medications cost us here in the United States, whether that cost is borne by individuals, insurance companies, or taxpayers. In one way or another, we're all covering that expense. And to expand participation and increase the savings to the state of Utah, this program is being expanded to Canada, where there is a clinic in the Vancouver airport. Dr. Jackie Batrai is an assistant professor of physical medicine and rehabilitation at Johns Hopkins University. Her research is focused on looking at how MS is treated in underserved populations here in the United States, and I find Dr. Batrai's research to be compelling. It demands our attention, and it demands our action. In a moment, we'll hear my conversation with Dr. Jackie Batrai. Dr. Jackie Batrai is a postdoctoral fellow at Johns Hopkins Medicine, and I met Dr. Batrai at the National MS Society's Tykeson Fellows Conference. This conference brought together about 100 young research and clinical trainees with senior scientists to learn about each other's latest research efforts and to build collaborations that tend to last years after these fellowships have ended. These are the young research scientists who are already advancing our understanding of MS and creating breakthroughs in MS rehabilitation strategies and treatments. And Dr. Batrai's research study really grabbed my attention. The study focused on racial disparities in depressive and anxious symptomatology among African Americans and Caucasians with MS. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Batrai.
Hi, Hi, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. You know, I should say that I am actually just very recently changed from fellow to assistant professor. It was such a new change, I didn't even mention that to you. So,
well, congratulations. You know, this year, I've seen and heard more about healthcare by zip code than ever. So before we get into the specifics of your study, can you tell us what healthcare by zip code refers to and why it's a topic that seems to be attracting growing interest from researchers?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And while healthcare by zip code piece has been honestly around for a long time, I think that it has just more recently gained national attention because we're realizing, okay, these disparities that the National Institute of Medicine came out and talked about, which largely they attributed to potential implicit racial bias among providers and other healthcare providers. They this came out maybe a decade. You know, I can't even remember how long ago, but the thing is, they're not decreasing, which is really sad. And these disparities are not decreasing. And in fact, some of these are getting even worse, which is quite problematic given in the U.S. we spend more money on healthcare than any developed country. And yet our health is one of the worst when we look at that comparison. So I think that the country as a whole are jumping on board with this kind of research agenda because we're seeing, like, just because we're doing research and it might be benefiting, you know, the majority of people, we're still missing this really important, like, group of people who have been historically underserved. And because they're not being treated or seen or receiving the highest quality of care, the entire system is now flawed. And so I think they're seeing the whole effect of it. And I believe that that is what's making this, like, big shift.
Well, your study looks at racial disparities in certain symptoms associated with MS among African Americans and Caucasians. What made you want to explore this particular subject?
Well, I briefly talked about this at the MS conference, but, you know, my family and I moved to the United States from the country of Nepal. I was actually born there, moved here, and I was about 8 years old. And so, you know, as we went through that entire process of, like, becoming naturalized American citizens, which happened about 6 or 7 years ago, you know, I saw the struggles that, you know, people I love and very close and dear to me, my parents, as well as other family members, not only experience, like, bias and mistreatment due to being immigrants, but also how this bias and racial discrimination, I would say, impacted overall well-being and then health over time. And, like, that effect on health is not as readily apparent, right? But now at the age that my parents are at, I mean, it's really sad to see. And I knew for a fact that, like, I'm not the only one with this kind of experience. And noticing this. And so when I went to grad school for psychology, you know, I ended up really focusing more so on health conditions because I realized, wait, there is actually already some research on this very personal experience for me. And then learning about, you know, chronic health conditions, I came into MS and learned, oh my goodness, I thought that MS was something that affects, you know, historically known to be like a white person's disease, and just learning about the disparities that exist. And to me, it's more of a personal thing. It just feels very unjust and not fair in a country where I, like, my family and I came to have equal opportunities that we didn't have in Nepal, you know?
So tell me about your study.
This race by zip code piece is kind of like the main focus is place. You know, we hear about race disparities, and there's the importance of place disparities cannot be emphasized enough. And so I've got two bigger studies, both looking at racial disparities in MS, but the one, the smaller one that's going to start within the next 6 months is looking at place and race-based disparities. And so this zip code piece, I call it place also because our zip code is indicative of the place in which we reside, our physical environment, including our neighborhood, the place at which we get healthcare, our grocery store or the availability thereof of healthy foods. And so we are learning that, you know, these things such as that Encompass Place have sometimes like just as much of a negative impact as does something like race. But, you know, in this country, race is very socialized. So it makes perfect sense that, you know, the social environment is now also a big, big focus here in research. And so for this study, I wanted to look at not only race, but this other big piece that the literature has been missing, right? And so to look at people's income level being one of the many indicators of place in terms of like the highest 75th quartile or the lowest 25th quartile or somewhere in the middle. Looking at that and psychological symptoms, specifically depression and anxiety among African American or Black individuals with MS as well as white individuals with MS, to kind of compare the two in terms of these symptoms. And we found that Black people with MS at the top of the quartile, bottom of the income quartile, Blacks consistently had more depression symptoms than whites. With respect to anxiety, however, this was seen at the bottom. At the bottom income quartile, Blacks had more anxiety symptoms than whites did. But when we got to the top of the income quartile, this difference was quite negligible, actually. It highlights so many things, I think. Not only that, so once you get to the top of the income quartile, anxiety is not as big of a problem. Like, it's not about race. Your income may be protective of that. Yeah, that may be the case. But however, we know that this is way more complex than just that simple statement. And there could be many things going on. You know, there's research that shows that at the top, minorities and other underserved populations, they don't feel that maybe they have this sense of belonging as they do and are still prone to depression. But, you know, we don't know much about anxiety in terms of like in MS. Are you protected from anxiety if you're able to, let's say, meet all your financial obligations? You know, that kind of like takes care of that, and then you can worry and focus on other things. So that is something that we want to investigate further in MS, and I look forward to, you know, finding what we can learn and then eventually using what we learn to develop evidence-based interventions to actually target and eventually eliminate these really unjust disparities.
I think your study shines a pretty bright light on a significant sociological problem and that has serious health implications for people on the lower end of the income spectrum who are living with MS or any other chronic illness. So is this a social justice issue? Is it really a healthcare issue? Where do you see the fixes coming from?
So I think depending on who you ask, you may get different responses. For me personally, this is, it's near and dear to my heart, I would say, just based on what I've shared. But also, for me, it is a big social justice issue. Like I said, these differences, you know, health disparities result based on the history of policies, decisions that a society makes. And so our society, especially in this country, has deliberately just made these decisions to allocate our best and most of our resources towards the people at the top, right? And then so when we take those resources to them, the others don't have it. And so then we see what we're seeing now. And so the fact that these are very preventable and result from decades, generations of oppression says a lot to me. Yeah, it can be a healthcare issue, but I think it can also be a political, you know, policy issue. It's like these disparities, to be able to address them, that is why one of my presentations I urged for strong interprofessional collaboration, because healthcare disparities are the result of so many decisions made across sectors that we really need people across professions to be working at this. Otherwise, it's hard to maintain the change we see, in maybe some immediate changes we see from interventional studies.
So what's next as far as this research goes?
So for this particular study, we'll be recruiting two groups of participants, one from Johns Hopkins, which we have a method set up where we can contact the patients that we know we see here in the MS Center. And then a second piece is to recruit individuals from the Baltimore community to participate or point us towards others who they know who may have MS as well. So I'm working with the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Equity and potentially like conduct focus groups to identify really what is the best way to reach these individuals that we may be missing right now. So that's the next step.
Well, Dr. Jackie Batra, your research points out an uncomfortable problem, but I think that being uncomfortable is the first step to finding a better way. So thank you for requiring that we start thinking of better ways to ensure that everyone has access to quality healthcare. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you, John. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I think that, yes, while this topic is uncomfortable, I think that we have uncomfortably stayed silent for far too long. And now, again, being the country with, you know, spending the most resources on healthcare, we are now have some of the worst among all the developed countries. So this silence is not going to work anymore. So thank you so much for pointing that out. Thank you.
Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. If you have a friend or family member who might also enjoy listening to the podcast, you can share this episode with them by suggesting they point their web browser at realtalkms.com/131. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into your email or text. And I hope you'll take just a minute to visit realtalkms.com/walkms and make a donation toward Walk MS today. The MS Society is the largest private funder of MS research in the world, and I think supporting their efforts just makes a lot of sense. This year, I'm walking to honor the memory of my wife, Jean, so I'm inviting you to help. Just visit realtalkms.com/walkms, and you'll also find that link in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.